What's up, guys? You're listening to the 412 Student Ministries Podcast out at Harmony in Avon, Indiana. My name is Adam. I'm the youth pastor here. Let's take a listen to see what we've been talking about.
Now, we are in the middle of, a series called Missing in Action. Missing in Action. Let me ask you a question. How many guys like theme parks? A couple people, really? Okay. So you guys like theme parks. A couple years ago, when Lauren and I were first dating, her family and myself took a trip to Kings Island. And it was a good time. We were having a great time. But we were, about midday, we were like getting hot. And we weren't going to go full on and do the water park and everything. We were just doing the regular park. So we were like, you know, we need to hit up a water ride. You know, cool down a little bit. So there's that. There's this like, I can't even think of what it's called. It's Whitewater Canyon. Is that what it is? Okay, Whitewater Canyon. It's basically you get in this tube, you sit in it in a big circle, it rolls you around. Some of you get like hit by waterfalls, others get sprayed on. You get wet, it's fun. But we're about to get in line for this. We're like, okay, you know what? We need to get in here. We need to get wet. It's just going to be a good time. We're super hot. But we have like everything. I'm really smart. We don't like eat there, so we bring our lunches. We pack everything, and I have this like one of those drawstring bags with me. Keep everything in there, you know? And I know. And at the beginning of the line, there's actually like these lockers that you can rent. I think they were like $5 for an hour or something. I don't even know what it was. But we didn't have the money, so we were like, you know what? We'll just throw it in the bin. Once we get up to the ride, they have these bins that you can throw it off, and then once you get off the ride, you just pick it up out of the bin and walk up. We've been doing this all day. Like, every single roller coaster, we just throw it in the bin, whatever. And so we get up there, and we're talking about the whole line. We're like, man, should we rent a locker? Nah, it's okay. We'll throw it in the bin, whatever. So we get up to the ride. We put it in the bin. We get in the ride. You know, have a good time. I don't think I even got wet. I think a couple other people did. We get off the ride. We go up to the bin. We grab our stuff. Our stuff is gone. Like, not just some of it. Like, all of it is gone. Like, our wallets, our cell phones, our money, the keys to the car, our lunches, everything is gone. And so what do I do? I call park security, and I call... No, I'm just kidding. Me and I think Lauren and my sister take off sprinting down the exit line on a mission to find these guys. I mean, I am, like, buffed up. I'm like, sister, who stole our stuff? Like, if I find this guy, I'm just like, it's going down, man. It's going down. You're going down. Where's the stuff? I mean, we're sprinting through this park to the point that we actually go to the exit of the whole park and just plop down. And we wait. We're staring. We're scanning, looking for our bags. Like, the person who stole our bag is just going to come walking up and be like, oh, this isn't your bag. Like, it was clearly my bag. Turns out, we weren't sure what we were going to do. And for a while there, we were like, oh, my goodness, man. Like, her mom had $300 cash that she borrowed from the soccer club or something to do this. She had permission, but basically it was the soccer club's money that was gone. We weren't sure how we were going to get back from Ohio because the keys were in the bag and stuff. Well, later on that day, in the bathroom, somebody found our bag, which luckily had, I think, the keys, some empty wallets, and maybe a cell phone or two. I don't remember what it was, but not everything. Like, most of our stuff was gone. Our digital cameras, all this stuff was gone. And but we were really freaking out because, like, we're stuck in Ohio. Like, I have no idea how we're going to get home. We don't really have a way to contact. Her dad was sick at the time, so he would have been, it would have been a hassle to get him to come out, unfortunately, and do that, I think. And it was not fun, you know. And sometimes when you lose something, it's not fun. It's not fun at all. And we're in this series called Missing in Action. It's basically talking about three parables that are found in Luke chapter 15. And last week we talked about the parable of what? Who knows? Parable of Jesus, the lost sheep, right? The parable of the lost sheep. And we're talking about how basically this one sheep wanders off and the shepherd leaves 99 sheep. He had 100 sheep with him. One wanders off. He leaves 99 to go search and find the one that's wandered off. And when he finds him, throws him on his shoulders, takes him back home, calls up all his buddies, they party. And what it was like a representation of somebody who needed to find Jesus, somebody who needed to give their life over to Christ, and they're wandering lost, and Jesus is seeking and searching to find him. When he finds him, I mean, all of heaven rejoices when that one sinner finds Christ. But it also talks about the 99 others, those who are wandering, lost. They don't even realize that they are lost. They're kind of wandering aimlessly without direction. They don't have protection. They don't have the provisions of the good shepherd. And they don't even realize that they need salvation. How dangerous it is to be a part of not only the one that's lost, but the 99 that don't realize that they're lost. Because at that point, those 99 will probably never give their life over to Christ. They'll just continue to be lost within the crowds, within the groups of their own life. Well, tonight we're going to be looking at the second of the three parables. And it's a really, really short one. You guys will be really happy because it's only three verses, okay? So you can really tune into just these three verses. We're going to read all three of these verses. They should be up on the screen, but it's going to be in Luke chapter 15. We're going to start in verse 8, okay? Luke chapter 15. Now, all of these parables are built off of this one foundation of what's happening in Jesus' ministry. One, it's at, like, the last year of his ministry. So it's in his third year, third of three, okay? So at the end of this year, at some point in this year, Jesus is going to go and die on the cross. And so after all the first 2 years, he starts to gain crowds, and people are starting to follow him. People are wondering, like, man, who is this guy performing miracles? I've seen him, you know, feed all these people with just, like, a little bit of food. I saw him heal this blind guy. I saw him cast demons out, and they all went into these pigs, and the pigs just jumped off a cliff, and it was crazy, man. You got to come see this guy. This guy is crazy. So Jesus is like, pulling all these people with him wherever he goes. And crowds, large crowds are starting to follow him, and they want to see, like, what is going to happen with this Jesus guy. Right? Well, unfortunately, some of the religious leaders who also would follow Jesus were upset with Jesus because Jesus didn't just hang out with the religious people. He hung out with, like, these people that weren't awesome. Basically, Luke chapter 15, verse 1 and 2 says this: Now the tax collectors and the sinners were all drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes, or the religious people, grumbled, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." I mean, Jesus isn't only just, like, talking with them and healing them. I mean, he's eating with them. I mean, come on, Jesus. Who eats with them? Right? That's too intimate, Jesus. It's too intimate. It's like on your first date. Like, remember this, guys? Very first time, or girls, too. Very first date you ever go on. You go out to eat. You're just sitting across. I'm really glad you can come out tonight. The waiter comes up, and you've been looking at the menu nervously. And you're like, oh, my goodness. I don't want to look like a weirdo eating the way I normally eat. So guys are like, yeah, I'll take one French fry and a Coke, please. And girls are like, can I just have a crouton and a water? And you're like so nervous eating. You're like, it's just too intimate. It's too intimate of a setting to sit there and eat with this person, right? But then, you know, 5 years in a marriage, you're like, hey, oh, Lord, can you please just get me some more food? I'm too fat for this. Okay, no? Same? Okay, good. But it's too intimate. So this is the setting that Jesus is at this point. He's gaining large crowds, religious people, Pharisees, you've got the sinners, you've got the tax collectors, you've got, like, pretty much everybody from everywhere is kind of following him, wanting to see. So this is where he is. And Jesus hears the religious people grumbling at him, like, oh, I can't believe this guy sits with him and eats with him. Seriously, Jesus. And so Jesus is like, boom, I'm going to hit you with some wisdom real quick as to why I came. So this is where we are. Parable of the lost coin. We're going to start in verse 8 right here. Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it. And when she has found it, she calls together her friends, her neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost. Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents." So we have this woman, and she's got some money, 10 silver coins. Now, these 10 silver coins, first off, let me tell you this. This is a parable. We talked about this last week, for those who don't know. A parable is like something that would speak to pretty much the whole crowd. The whole crowd would kind of understand this parable. But there's like a deeper meaning, a deeper spiritual meaning. And only the people who kind of, remember this, lean in a little bit to listen, to seek and search what God's talking about, will get this parable. And so he's going to lay this down. He's going to say this. And most people are going to understand, okay, she's got 10 silver coins. Cool. You know, but the 10 silver coins actually has a little bit of a significance. Not only does the coins have a monetary value, the Greek word is drachme. Everybody say drachme, not Dracula, drachme. I'm just kidding. It equals basically one of these drachmes, okay? I'm not even saying this right. Let's see. Hold on. Drachme. There you go. Everybody say drachme. Basically, one of these silver coins would equal about one day's wage, okay? This is kind of the 10 silver coins. This is a representation. This isn't actually them, but this is representation. But on top of the monetary value, okay, they would each hold basically one day's wage. But on top of this, they hold significant sentimental value, because what would happen is on their wedding day, they would have a ceremony. And on the ceremony, it would be custom that the male, or the husband, would give over 10 silver coins to his wife. And what this was is she would put this in like a headband like this, and she would wear it around her head. And it was basically like the husband is paying what's called a dowry, and it was in exchange for marriage. And so he's basically saying, he's signifying that she's been purchased or paid in full. Now she is going to be his wife, and it's his promise to her that he's going to love her forever. Okay, a lot of times these marriages would be arranged at this time. It wasn't like everybody was falling out for love, you know. They would be arranged. A lot of times it would be for family purposes, but they would pay for the wife, showing him, signifying that he's going to give everything to her. Now, the purpose of this is a lot like the wedding ring or the engagement ring, right? So that's what this is kind of back then. So now you kind of understand what happens is you kind of understand her panic. When she loses one of these coins, it actually means something terrible. Okay, so what it means is that now all 10 coins, which belong to her husband, which he paid her, she has now lost one, which could mean either one, she lost it, which whoopsie-doo, that was dumb, or two, she lost something of value, or two, she's now given that to another man. And that could literally ruin her life. Because the husband could come back and say, where's your wedding ring? You pawned off your wedding ring? And he could divorce her. And she would have to live a life of shame the rest of her life. So you understand a little bit more of her panic. It wasn't just 10 silver coins. Like, this is a big deal. Like, this is a really big deal. So what does she do? She lights a lamp to see in her dark house. Now, it's not like here where we have a million lights and lamps and stuff like this. No, if it, like, at 6 o'clock, the house is, like, pitch black, okay? The only way you're going to see it is if you have a lantern, right? So she lights a lantern, and she starts to sweep. She gets a broom, and she starts to sweep crazily all throughout her house, trying, searching, looking through every nook, every crevice, every cranny, under every piece of furniture, desperately retracing her steps, like any woman would do if she lost her wedding ring. Like, what in the world happened to him? And then when she finds it, she calls up all of her friends, all of her family's like, guys, I found it! I found the coin! Get over here! We're gonna party! Like, this is gonna be a big celebration! Get over here now! And it's at this point that Jesus kind of decides to wrap up the story with a moral. And he describes the joy in heaven. Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God for one sinner who repents. Which brings us to the point tonight. We have to learn to see the value that God places in every single sinner. Here's the problem. We understand what we're called to do. If you're a Christian here, most of you guys understand. You understand Matthew 28 says to go make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them like we're going to do tonight. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey all the things that Jesus has commanded. We get that. We understand. Okay, we're supposed to tell the people about Jesus. We understand that. But the issue is that we don't understand the value of the people that we're supposed to tell. We don't understand the value that God has for that sinner. Because if we did, nothing would stop us. We'd tell everybody all the time. We'd be like, you are so valuable. We need to tell you you're lost. Let me put it this way. If we saw $100 just chilling on a sidewalk, $100, okay? A hundo, right? A Benjamin. And we didn't understand the value of that $100, okay? Work with me. It would be nothing more than trash to us. It would just be a piece of paper on the ground. Right? We would just keep on trekking. But because we understand the value of that $100, I mean, guess what? You just got $100 richer. Like, boom. Yes, I'm buying something. Let me put it this way. Okay. This is my laptop. Okay?
Not the most expensive thing in the world, but it's pretty valuable.
A couple $300, $400 worth. It does a lot of things. And the thing is that I use this often. And because I use it often, I understand the value. that laptop probably isn't going to work anymore. I'm just saying. Okay. Okay, there we go. Now it's definitely not going to work anymore. Okay. This laptop is not going to work anymore. Listen, shh. And some of you guys might have seen that coming, but for those who didn't, were you a little like, oh my goodness, he just dropped his laptop. And here's the reason why. Yes, there's a knockback. Here's the reason why, though. You understand that there's value in this. You may not understand how much this laptop cost, but you understand there is value in this. And so by me dropping it unexpectedly, breaking it, you'd be like, oh man, that stinks. Because you understand the value of sinness. Here's the thing. It's the same way. We've got to learn to see the value that God places in every single sinner. And we tend to judge others, and we don't necessarily do this like on purpose. Okay, it's not like all of us walk around and be like, oh my god, I fucking believe she's wearing that shirt. She looks ridiculous. It may not be into some of you might do that, but that's okay. That's okay. We'll talk in a different time. Okay. But we may look at somebody and we look at their actions and we see what they're doing and we see who they hang out with and whether they go to church and what job they have and the things that they participate and how much of a class clown they are and how unpopular they are. And we take all of these things into account and we determine their value. Listen, we determine their value immediately. And it's at that point you decide two things. Am I going to talk to this person? And am I going to be friends with this person? But the thing is, we don't have the right to determine the value of another individual. That's only God's job. And God determined our value before creation. He was willing to pay for us with his own life. John 3:16, the most popular verse in the Bible, says, "For God so loved the world." He valued the world so much that he sent his only son to die on a cross, that whoever would believe in him should never perish but have eternal life. But it doesn't just stop there. Verse 17 says that he didn't come into the world to condemn the world. He didn't come in here to say, you're not valuable. You're not valuable. You don't hang out with the right people. You don't go to church enough. You don't preach enough. You don't tell people about Jesus, so I don't value you. No, he didn't come to condemn the world. He came so that the world, through him, could be saved. That's it. And here's the cool thing. God's value for us doesn't depreciate with our actions. What does that mean? It means that when you leave here tonight and you've recommitted yourself, you're like, I'm going to be a better Christian. And you wake up tomorrow and you go to school and you're back with the bad crowd of people, which is just bringing you down, and you're cursing and you're like, you won't even tell people about Jesus, and you're living a life that you absolutely know that you should not live. It doesn't mean that God values you any less. Because I want you to understand this tonight. Just like we need to understand the value of every single sinner, we also need to understand that we are extremely valuable to God. 2 Corinthians 5:21 says, "For our sake, he made him to be sin, who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God." That means that God came and he took something that he didn't deserve. He took something that we deserve because he sees value in us. He paid that price. 1 Corinthians 6:20 says, "For you were bought with a price, so glorify God in your body." Jesus paid that dowry. Our lives have been paid in full, and we don't determine our own value. Only God determines that. Would you bow your heads really quick?
Thank you so much for tuning in to the 412 Student Ministries podcast out at Harmony in Avon, Indiana. My name is Adam. I am the youth pastor here. If you have any questions about anything that we've talked about today, feel free to email me at adam@harmonyofavon.com. Again, thanks for tuning in. I hope you have an awesome week.